If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone, tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you found us wherever you consume your podcasting content on Apple, Audioboom, or as always on the Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence, along with the one and surely only Darren Bunch. In California, and our producer, sound engineer, and music guru, Chris McEwen, who's at his mega studio in Chi-Town, Sweet Home Chicago. You can find all three of us on Twitter and Instagram, me at Mitch Lawrence, Darren at Golf Getaways, and Chris at Chris McEwen. Also, of course, check out Chris's stupendous Golf Origin Stories podcast if you haven't done so already. Is that too
stupendous.
Much, Chris?
Stupendous.
Is that too much, Chris? Have I done too much?
I thought you were going to stop at stupid and I'll be like,
oh, no. All right. Today,
isn't it so great that at Mitch Lawrence, at Golf Getaways, at Chris McEwen is just all across all platforms as opposed to what we used to have to do when they were all different.
Yes.
Right. That's true.
I agree. It was a brilliant stroke on our part. And you can tell because our accounts have exploded. Just the number of followers
also
is
true.
Just incredible. As you might be able to tell, today we are our own guest on the pod. I think that's a good way to put it. Since we all just returned from a truly fantastic golf getaway, finally we got to get out and go somewhere. And it was a pretty good place we went. French Lick, Indiana, the unbelievable French Lick Resort. And with thanks at the top to our partner and friend, Ryan Ballingy of Golf Newsnet fame, for setting it all up. Dudes, pretty sure we're going to remember this one for a long, long, long time.
I think we definitely are going to remember it. It was a lot of fun. It was the first time the three of us have ever been together in one place. True. So you and I obviously have traveled together all over the world, but we got to tee it up with Chris and drink some beverages and eat some food and do all the things that people do. We also got to, and Chris, remind me, you have a YouTube show and I don't remember what it's called.
It's called, That Range Life.
That Range Life. I was going to say Driving Range Heroes or something like that, but That Range Life. And on there, you referred to Mitch and I and the other people on this trip as social media internet nerds.
It's okay. It's, I mean, where's the lie? Where's the lie?
As Groucho would say, I've been called a lot of things in my life, but that's not one of them.
It's an endearing term for us. I only call my closest friends social media internet golf nerds.
I am happy to be among them. I don't know about Darren, but I'm happy to be among them.
It was very, very nice of you to say it that way. I'm glad that you're still on the podcast now that you've met Mitch and I in person, because it could have gone horribly awry, as it has with many people.
Oh, man. That's one of the, obviously, one of the enduring memories is going to be just hanging out with you two for the first time, hopefully for the first of many. And it'll be an enduring memory for a lot of reasons, but mostly because it was fun. But it was great.
It wasn't. I have to tell you, Darren, just in reference to that, this, we all know that some of what we like to think of, and my wife doesn't get this. This is not who she is, but a lot of the three of us have made, as have all people who use social media for the right reasons. We have a lot of friends who we've never met in person. Chris is on a whole different level because we've done this together now for a while. I've talked to Chris and you have a bunch of times on the phone. So it's even deeper than that. But when I saw Chris, when we got finished, I joined you for the back nine at the Ross course on Sunday when I got there. And when we finished and I was looking up at the clubhouse and I saw Chris, who was probably, what, Chris, 50 yards away? I mean, you're up on the hill. And I started waving. I was like a kid seeing Santa Claus. It was stupid. If people were watching me, they probably, it wasn't like I just eagled 18. I was back there waving both hands. Chris is here. Chris is here. So it was great. That's all I'm trying to say.
It was good.
And we should point out, and this is the shameless plug of all shameless plugs, the three of us are going to be together again at the end of summer at Gamble Sands in Wine Valley out here in the West. And you could go with us. All you have to do is contact us. And by you, I mean the listeners, not the two of you guys. Obviously, you are going. But just all you got to do is contact me on social media, get the details. It's going to be a heck of a fun trip. We're going to play a lot of Gamble Sands. We're going to play a lot of Quick Sands at Gamble Sands. And we're going to go spend a day and play 36 holes at Dan Hickson's fantastic Wine Valley. It's going to be a trip you will not want to miss. Shameless plug over.
Good, though. Good job. Good shameless plug. There's bad ones. That was a good one. All right, let's get to talking about French Lick, since that's really why we're here today, other than just yakking with each other, which I love doing. There's a lot of history at French Lick. Do you guys know why it's called French Lick?
I don't, but I think Chris enough? Does.
Do you know why, Chris?
No, I don't.
Oh.
Wow, this is, take your headsets off and go home. I mean, you just spent 4 days there. Never once did you go, why is it called French Lick? I'm here to help. And
I asked you why French Lick was a thing, and you explained that to me.
Well, a thing. But that's a story we can't tell here.
Right.
Because that has to do with actual France and Parisians and different trips. So we're not going
to
talk about
that. I thought it had to do with Prohibition.
It doesn't. That's not where French Lick came from at all. I'm not giving you a full history lesson because, as I did, if you really go and read the history of the entirety of French Lick, it's unbelievable. But in a nutshell and quickly, the area in Indiana where French Lick is was, as all of America was, inhabited by Native Americans for hundreds and hundreds of years. And the French were the first that came and eventually settled it. This was, a few centuries ago. And when the French got there, what they found was incredible mineral springs. And when the Native Americans were there, it was a gathering place for animals because of the salt licks that were in the mineral springs. And the animals of all different varieties would come and gather there in order to lick the salt. You know, it comes up in rocks and there's salt on it.
Sure.
They would gather and they would stand around licking. I guess the only way to put it. The Native Americans looked at it as a kind of a happy ground, a sacred ground. Then, of course, the French came and they started to settle there. And they realized the value of the mineral springs and the salt. And that's what started the eventual settlement of that area. But there were a couple of other names for that area. But eventually, because the French were there and the Licks were there, it came to be known as French Lick. And that's where the actual term comes from.
We should have drank some margaritas and licked some salt of our own.
Yeah, but that would bring in a whole other culture. And I think it's purer than that. Anyway. Okay. So I want to first shout out to Brendan Sweeney. Also, we thanked Ryan Ballingy, and he worked with Brendan Sweeney, who's a great friend of ours. He's the master of all things French Lick. He's the head of media relations for French Lick, and he did a great job too. So thanks to Brendan for helping this go as smoothly as it did. There are three different golf courses. We will talk about the rest of the resort, the hotels and the other things in town, but we're here to talk golf and golf getaways. There's three different and unique courses at French Lick. One widely well-known to the world of golf travel, big time events. Of course, the Pete Dye course. One less so, but part of a great 1-2 punch at French Lick, the Donald Ross course. And the third, which we will get to, I know, a rarely mentioned gem of a 9-hole layout designed by the great Scotsman Tom Bendelow, the Johnny Golfaseed. He was called Johnny Appleseed. I call him Johnny Golfaseed, designer from the first half of the 20th century. And when you read about Tom Bendelow, the numbers that are thrown around, he traveled the country by train, and he's credited with designing anywhere from 400 to 600 golf courses across the United States. So if you haven't heard of Tom Bendolo, get on it. You're going to learn about a really fascinating guy. Anyway, we have thoughts on all the... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think unique is the important word here. That when we go to a lot of golf resorts, you have golf that is great at these destinations, but it is similar in a lot of ways. Yeah. And in these three courses, there's nothing similar about them. The Dye is insane. Yeah. The Ross is historic. And the Bendolo is just like pure tucked away goodness. And they are all very, very different in the way they are. And so when you play all of them as part of a trip, you get a, you know, kind of a wide swath of what golf in America is right now in all of these three experiences.
It's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely great point. All right, let's start with the Dye course because it's the first. Darren, you played 18 at the Ross first. I played 9. But I want to start with the Dye course because it's the most well-known. And a few quick notes. I'm sure you guys know this because one thing that happens when you go to the resort, any of the golf courses, you will learn about the golf courses and their history by the people who work there. Literally. And it doesn't matter if it's a head pro or somebody working on the grounds or at the driving range, everybody there is invested in these spots. So I happened to learn a bunch from a guy who gave me a lift in the cart from the driving range at the Dye Club course up to the clubhouse. And it turns out his name is Johnny Apple, literally. And as we're in the cart, another cart drives by and he says, "Oh, there goes the superintendent. Oh, and he's my son." And I said to him, what's interesting about putting it that way is it sort of says where your allegiance lies. You're saying there's the superintendent and also he's my son. And they have this incredible relationship. Anyway, let's just get a little bit, and I'll do this quickly, of a background for those of you who don't know about the Pete Dye course, because the stories, and I know you two guys have heard these too, but the stories you hear about Pete Dye designing this place, as Darren said, it is insane. When you drive up and you first see on top of this mountain, this layout, your jaw literally drops. Golf was a big part of the French Lick scene for decades, since the early 1900s. And it hosted various men's and women's major events as early as 1924, which kind of blew me away. But the Cook family, who was the driving force in the last 20 years, they decided to really up the destination. They built a new course on the property atop the intense, we'll use that landscape phrase, of the intense landscape of Mount Airy, which is the highest point in Indiana. Okay, so here's the deal. They call in Pete Dye. They talk to a number of architects. They call in Pete Dye. He went out and he walked the property, which he described as treacherous. And he came back and he told the Cook family no golf course could be built there. This is the truth. But he didn't want to let it go. So he went back to the resort and he took all the topographic maps and he looked at them and he came back to the family with a full layout of a course drawn on a napkin, which they still have there. And he gave it to them and he said, "I'm going to build it whether you want me to or not." That's what he envisioned. Now, we all have Pete Dye stories, but everybody tells the stories about. One guy said to me, "You see that 18th fairway there?" "Yes." "Looked out. It's nuts." And he said, "That was once one level, that fairway and the fairway below it." He said, "But Dye came out one morning and looked at it and said, all wrong. That fairway should be 30 feet below the other fairway." And this is on the side of a mountain.
Yep.
It's not just let's move some dirt. This is literally on the side of a mountain. And they dropped it 30 feet because he didn't want the players on the 18th fairway to see the players that were playing the hole next to him. So anyway, those stories abound. The Dye course opened in 2009. It held a PGA event in 2010, the senior PGA championship in 2015, the senior LPGA championship in 17 and 18. And it's going to host it again in August of this year. Guys, I think we're going to feel a little different when we get to watch the senior LPGA championship this year after playing it.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun to watch it on TV. You should note here, Mitch, that I played it when it first opened. Mm-hmm. So back in 2009, pre-Hickory days for me, I went out and I played it. And I think it got a lot of acclaim when it opened for the fact that when you go all the way back to the tips, it stretches more than 8,000 yards.
Correct.
And I played all the tees that were open at that time in 2009. And I think I played it at 7,600. And I walked away from it thinking, well, first thinking, damn, that's a long golf course. But second of all, there's a lot of room out there. So you can play, you can get around it. And, you know, I found that this time too, that it's far more playable than it lets on when you think about it being at the top of a mountain. And the just absolutely insane greens he built that we love that kind of thing, you know, Strantz and McClay Kidd and all those guys who do that kind of thing now. But, you know, I remember thinking about it way back then and walked off of it and just had a blast. It was just me and a caddy one morning and we were like, well, let's play it from as far back as we can. And I had a great time. I think I broke 100, luckily, just barely. But then playing with the Hickories, coming back, playing it from shorter tees where we all played, you know, it's equally a blast. And I think that's the mark of a great golf course is that you can, you know, all different levels of people can play it and have fun and embrace the challenge because it certainly is a challenge. You know, I'm not trying to say it's easy, but it is fun. And that's, you know, in a word, that's what we're looking for.
Chris, thoughts?
Yeah. First, shout out to Randy, our guy out there, who led us through that first round, who was an absolute blast, just a great four caddy. I think I mentioned on the YouTube show that it was probably the most pristine golf course I've ever stepped foot on. I mean, I think all of us had talked about the greens it looked like we were the first ones to play those greens ever. I mean, it was just immaculate, just absolutely immaculate. You know, some of the views, it sounds funny to say, cause you're in Indiana, like in the Midwest or whatever, but like some of the views, you know, like, you know, Randy took us up to the highest point and showed, and you could look down and see whatever it was, four or five holes from certain, tee boxes and stuff. It was breathtaking. It's just beautiful.
And you can see 40 miles from that point.
Yeah. I mean, Darren, remember when we went out at whatever it was, 5 a.m. to fly drones like goofs, like the fog coming off the water in the morning. And it was just beautiful. It's just so nice.
Drone nerds.
It's drone nerds. Social media,
internet, drone nerds.
I'm never going to live that one down.
Yeah, you know what's weird though? I talked about the first sight when I drove up the mountain to get to the clubhouse, and what you're talking about the conditioning, it literally hits you when you're driving up that road and you look at it. Forget being on it.
Yeah,
it's almost like the course is lit up in a way because of how incredibly well maintained this golf course is. This is as good as any PGA golf course conditioning, I guarantee you, on a regular day like the day we were there, like the couple days we were there. I mean, mm-hmm. Now you guys know my short game is nothing to be admired, but we were putting routinely putting, if you were in the fairway, from 50 yards off the green.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the fun of that course. Like you can play, there are multiple ways to play golf ball on that golf course, which to me is just, that's the fun of it, is the decision making and how you want to do this and using the ground game and that kind of stuff. Hickories are not like, I'm not afraid to putt it from 50 yards away.
Right.
Who cares?
It played very linksy in a way. You know, a lot of the greens are elevated, so that takes away from it a little bit from being, you know, kind of a true links experience, but it felt very, the way they maintain it and the way they cut the paths to the hole, is very, very much, you know, in the links tradition, of the golf that we like to play, you know, the bump and run type of, mentality that attracts us to a lot of golf courses.
And as you, I mean, when you're hitting approach shots, for most of us, we're just trying to put it on the green most of the time. But the way, once you get closer to the green, you're definitely playing like a link style array of shots based on the greens It's very rare that you actually go with a pin. You know, you're playing away from it to get it there. So I think that's true. Let's talk for a second about, Darren, you mentioned the length. It plays anywhere from five, I'm not sure the exact number, but let's say about 5,200, 5,300 yards all the way up to 8,100 yards. But let's talk for a second about one of the features that people may be aware of. But until, like most of the golf course, until you actually see the volcano bunkers in action, I don't think you really get an idea of what he did with those. I mean, they're mind-boggling little fun places to play out of.
I shot some pictures of, I guess, is it number 10, where they really come into play on the par three?
Yeah,
right on the back of the kind of where the parking lot is there going off that way. I was running the drone from the parking lot and kind of found this hole and was like, oh, this is so cool. And then we got out there and realized what the hole was. The drone pictures don't do it justice because you just see kind of the caps of these little volcano bunkers. But I think I put on social media somewhere that when you are in it and you're playing through those volcanoes that are on all sides of you on that hole, you know, it feels like you're playing golf in a Tim Burton movie. It's just these huge, you know, landforms all around you, and you're either driving your cart through them, you know, weaving through them, or you're out in the fairway hitting shots in them. And they're super cool and just something completely different that you don't see at almost any other golf course that I can think of.
Those things are so cool.
Again, you know the story of how they happened.
No, go ahead, Mitch.
Why don't I tell you? Excuse me. The story is that those were mounds of dirt that were in the process of being moved. And Pete Dye, as they were getting ready to kind of level them, and this is why guys like this on the fly to me are the most interesting. You know, any of the architects that we're fortunate to know or talk to, they all have this ability, which is to work while the work's going on. And they see something that they didn't expect or plan, and they go, you know what? Very cool. And he did that with these. As they were getting ready to move the dirt, he went, you know what? Don't want to do it. Hollow them out, put grass up the face, and make them into bunkers. And that's literally how they happened. They weren't something that on the napkin, he said, I'm going to put volcano bunkers here. He just saw them as a feature while they were doing it and building, and he said, let's go with it. And
if he had drawn those on the napkin, it would have been awesome.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Well, now he could. He would have opened a laptop and said, here's a 3D image of what I want. But back then they didn't. He wasn't a social internet nerd, you know. So I guess he would be a napkin nerd, though, is what we could call Pete.
Good point.
All right. Well, we've kind of covered it. It is an unbelievable experience, is basically the takeaway on all fronts. And, you know, once you get there, you understand why there's been majors there. Great champions have won there, and there's going to be more to come. And I can't wait, as we said, to watch it. Let's move to the Ross course.
Mitch, let me add one thing real quick. Yep. It's expensive. Yes. I mean, let's just say that it's expensive to play, and you have to take a four caddy. So that adds to the expense. It is one of the few places in this country that is that price that I would go back and pay to do. Because I think if you're making the trip to French Lick and you don't play the die course once or maybe even twice, you're missing out on something. It is every bit worth the money for the experience you get out there. And, you know, I like to say that about these more expensive things because, you know, sometimes people go, oh, I'm just not going to pay for that. But this is worth the money if you have the money to spend on a trip like this.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point because we have this discussion about places like, I mean, how many times have you been asked, is Pebble worth it?
Right.
Or, exactly. You know, courses like that. And you say, okay, it's not something we're going to play twice a month. But if you're saving up and planning a trip one time to French Lick and you don't include all these fees, like you said, and absolutely agree that it's worth it because it gets up there. It is really pricey. But all right, let's move to the Ross course. As you said, Darren, a course by a different color, but totally worth it. You and I being Hickory players, Donald Ross fans. I know Chris, I'm sure you're a Ross fan, even though you don't play Hickories. Are you?
I love you? Donald Ross. Okay. I loved it. I've sought him out on trips. You know, last year I went to Kansas City
now,
and
right?
Well, you ever sought his courses out on trips.
All right, sorry.
But yeah, I do. We have got one here, Ravislo, that is one of my favorite places in the world.
Oh, cool. So
Chris was turned on to the beauties of Donald Ross by his YouTube partner.
It's true.
That's a story I saw. See, Chris, I pay attention to your other work.
Thanks, man.
Do you want some kind of medal for that? What?
No, I just wanted to acknowledge.
Usually people that work together do pay attention to the people they work with. Stuff. But anyway, I'm glad you know about Bill and Donald Ross, and we're grateful to Bill for all that. So anyway, I knew I was going to be really excited to get on the Donald Ross course, being a Hickory player like you, Darren. And it's one of those things where totally different, like you said, than the Dye course, designed strangely enough by Donald Ross. I know that's weird because his name is on the course, but they decided to do that. It opened in 1917. And to me, this is why this kind of course is, as far as the history goes, when you get a chance to step on these kind of courses, hosted the PGA Championship in 1924, won by Walter Hagen, one of his many PGA Championships. It hosted the LPGA Championship in 59 and 60. And then the course underwent a huge renovation redo. Again, the Cook family stepped in 2006. They spent $5 million to make changes in the course. And in concert with the Donald Ross Society, they restored 80 bunkers to their original shapes. And 35 of those bunkers were actually the original Ross bunkers. So they went in, they didn't change them. They just, you know, redid them to make them playable now, which I think it's just so stinking cool that 100 years later, you're standing in the ones that Ross designed.
It's awesome.
They did the greens. They redid the greens as well. They're absolutely 100% pure Donald Ross. And take that as you want. He will make you swear. He
let Darren talk about the greens.
Laugh. And they're a trip. Any chance you get, and on conditions like they have there, it is as pure Donald Ross as you're going to find.
It's kind of funny. We played it, you know, the first day and it was a little bit rainy. So everything was a little slower. And then we played it again 2 days later and everything had dried out and everything was cut tight. And I'm telling you, boy, there are greens out there. I think I five putted a green. I know I rolled.
Wait. You think you five putted a green?
It seems like
I know it. You five putted a green.
I tried to get it, you know, erase it from my memory. I putted it.
Darren,
at
wait,
least two balls off of green.
Well, yeah. before you skip rapidly over the five putt green, I want to bring back that painful memory because I think one of the things that killed us about it was the putt you had, the flag, it's a long green. And obviously, back to front, it's like looking down the ski jump at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And you had a putt at the back that was pin high, about, I'm going to say, 3 feet from the hole.
Yeah, I was above the hole by about 3 feet.
You hit a really, really good putt. You just touched it. You hit a really good putt that slid by the front by, I don't know, an inch, 2 inches. It didn't miss by much. And then all of us, are you getting this memory back now, Darren?
Yeah, I've got it now.
All of us stood there watching the ball because it didn't go flying down the green. It went tumbling.
Just matriculated its way down.
As Mel Brooks would say, jaunty jolly on its way down the green and off. And then you had to putt back up that green.
Yeah, which I did unsuccessfully.
Correct.
A number of times.
Correct. But I think the great thing is we kind of knew it was somewhere coming to all of us had, you know, stupid experiences. Yeah. That was probably the top of the heap. But those greens are if you want an experience and having some fun, as long as you take it that way, it's great.
Yeah. And that was the shortest hole. That's the shortest par four on the property, the par four eighth, which I have a little qualms with. I wish they cut the fairway farther up to the hole, you know, just because of the way a hole's designed. But that green itself, when you look at it, you can see that Ross built it. It's almost like rectangular in a way. And it's got that huge ridge that, you know, the pin was as diabolical as it could possibly be up in that left-hand corner. But we did that on a couple of holes, you know, once they got up to speed. And when you think about the pros back in, you know, 1924 playing this thing, you know, I'm assuming the green speeds weren't what we're getting now out of them. But if they were, those guys were really, really good, because it's, you know, the greens are, you know, they're fantastically fun, and they will make you pull your hair out all at the same time. And, you know, to us, you know, it's not like we're out there playing for money or history. So we had a really good time playing.
Yeah. Do you remember the putt I made for par on 10? Where I think I bumped it probably, it had to have been 20 feet parallel to the hole. And I found that ridge, and it just kind of worked its way all the way down. And and that was it.
And,
and that's the great thing too, because when you do, man, they don't happen often, but when you do make a good putt like that, that kind of stays with you. And that's reason enough to love it.
I mean, that's the fun part of it. You can get, you can play it that way. Like you see on TV, the pros with these crazy sort of angles as they putt. And like, I got to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was super fun.
The only thing that I kind of I thought was interesting, and we talked about it when we were there. So if you're listening to this and you're planning on playing the Ross course, just be prepared for it, because it's a part of it. And that is that the rough off the fairway is long.
Oh boy.
The rough on the dye course tends to be shorter.
And farther away, but equally
as dangerous, as we remember from number 18, where we could not get back from the valley of death of rough to the fairway. Fairway. It took me 5 swings to get the ball from the valley of death to the fairway at 18. But let's forget that. But the rough on the Ross course, I mean, it really, really makes it difficult to play out of it. So just be prepared. They may cut it shorter. You know, they may get out there over the summer when it's a little bit probably drier, and they may say, okay, let's take this down a little bit.
Yeah. And I believe the first cut of rough on the Ross course could be opened up quite a bit. I think there might be a little too much of it for the everyday player. Fairways could be widened and opened up. And it's like I was saying on number 8, that which goes down this huge swale and back up to that green, and they've kept it all rough down there. You know, and I feel like if you can hit a great turning shot down, you know,
around
from
the
that tee around there, the corner, you should be rewarded with fairway down in that swale, and then you're hitting a shot up to the green. And instead, there's no reason to even do that, because you just end up in rough, and it's a lot harder, and it's sticky rough. And so it's tough to make a play. So you're kind of locked in on that hole to just throwing it out.
Lay up.
Lay
up
somewhere.
Try to keep it at the top of the hill. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you hit your second one. And if you don't lay up quite close enough to the edge, then you've got a really super long shot. I'd rather see that be a much more risk reward hole. The other thing about the way the Ross course is maintained compared to the Dye is that we were talking about how you could hit all the bump and run shots you wanted at the Dye course. The Ross course, not so much. The green, the grass, the collars, the area 50 yards out is not as tight. It's not maintained as tightly as the Dye. So you are hitting a lot more flying shots into holes. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just, as a point of comparison between the two, it's one of the things that makes the two courses feel so different and play so differently, you know, when you're out there.
Yeah, I would say as a Midwesterner, that felt like a much more Midwest style golf course. So for those that play, you know, in the Midwest, that's, you know, that's what you get. You get kind of juicier rough, and you're flying shots into the green, you know, from wherever you are, basically.
And the interesting thing too is that, you know, on both of these courses, the elevation is nuts. So yes. You're always looking. Yeah. There's I don't know if too many, if we had 36 holes on the two courses, I don't know if you'd find 10 that are what we'd call, you know, a flat shot. You're always dealing with downhill and then uphill, mostly to the greens. Occasionally, I mean, there's some great downhill shots to the greens too, but it's just the thing I think to keep reminding yourself is think of how engaged we were the whole time we were playing.
Yes.
You can't take a shot off.
There. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'd mentioned that, that neither architect gives you, they concede nothing.
Exactly.
From hole to hole, from shot to shot, they will not give you anything.
Damn. Mitch, you know, as you know, I played with Jim Ng a couple of summers ago at BlackRock. And he was talking about his mentality of golf design and that some holes are chocolate and some holes are milk. And you need that milk palate cleanser, you know, because the chocolate holes are so rich and, you know, just really get into your head, and that you got to give people kind of a little time off. And what I thought with both of these courses is there's no milk out there. Yep. There's no milk. It's all chocolate. 18 holes on each of them. Just, you are just digging in and, you know, it's just, it's so rich, the experience. And that makes it hard, but it's like you guys say too, it also makes you be engaged all the time. You know, and certainly on the die, it was helpful for us that, you know, having the caddies, and I mean, you mentioned Randy, we had Roadrunner as a caddy too, who coincidentally, you know, has ties to Bandon. So, you know, it's a small golf world in these places. He knew, the guy I'm working with at Pacific Gales, Troy Russell. They were friends. So, you know, it's just, but having those guys really help you on the die. I wonder how I would feel if I had a four caddy on the Ross course. You know, would I have been able to get it around better? I'm certain I would have been able to. He wouldn't have helped me not put it off the green on number eight, but he, you know, other than that, I think you would see angles better from somebody who's been there a lot. And if you get out there and you get to play those courses, you know, the Ross course a lot, then you would see the different ways to play it. I think that maybe we don't get to see playing it only a handful of times on a trip like this.
For sure.
True. All right. So we've covered the die. We've covered the Ross. A lot more we could say about him, obviously, but I think you get the general idea. And when you talk about chocolate milk and Jim Ng, I will now describe the Valley Links designed by Tom Bendelo.
Don't skip over the clubhouses. I mean, we need to mention the clubhouses at the Diamond.
Okay,
Ross.
Yeah, I was going to get to that later, but go to it now. Go.
I mean, I was just going to say that those two places, those two clubhouses, are as good as it gets. I mean, they're both stately. The one on the die is, you know, looks like a mansion that somebody's lived in forever.
So great.
You know, at the top of that mountain.
Here we go again, Darren. You know that is exactly the case.
Is there history with it, Mitch?
No, not at all. Just the fact that Taggart and the Taggart family, that was the mansion they lived in at the top of the hill.
Beautiful.
That's why it looks like a mansion. Because it actually is.
Because it is a mansion.
Yeah.
It's fitting.
I knew it because when I drove up and I got out and I walked, you have to walk around the back of it to get the full view of, you know, this ridiculous Indiana countryside from the top of a mountain. And on the back, they have stone steps, mm-hmm. right? And anyone who knows me knows I love steps. I'm somewhat transfixed by them. Ben Green knows this. He's that
hashtag
way
step whore.
Well, no, I would say step nerd.
Step nerd.
Okay. But anyway, I'm walking around in the back and I'm looking at this incredible mansion-like clubhouse from the back, and there's walls and a beautiful veranda out in the back, and it's all stone, and there's about three or four steps that lead up to where the clubhouse is. That's all, three or four steps, and there's a sign next to it that says, due to the historic nature of these steps, please be careful, they are uneven. And I thought to myself, okay, any place that has a sign calling three or four steps historic has to be something special. And it is. I mean, so go ahead. The clubhouse was the Taggart family mansion.
I mean, it's fantastic up there.
Amazing. Yeah.
The view is just unparalleled. The service was outstanding. Sitting out on the back, you know, of that thing in between rounds and having a bite to eat was great. The clubhouse at the Ross is much more a traditional clubhouse, but it's every bit is kind of stately and feels like it's of the era of that golf course. And the food in there that they serve in the restaurant, fantastic. You know, we had soup and sandwiches, Ryan and I, when we arrived, and just a great place with great people running it in there. The clubhouse, I mean, the pro shop, golf shop in there is just stacked with about anything you could possibly find. It's one of the more, I don't know, tightly constricted walking areas in any golf shop I've ever been in, but that's because it just has so much cool stuff everywhere. You could spend all kinds of time in there finding stuff. So to me, those two buildings really help make the experience on each of those golf courses, you know, and take it to another level beyond just the golf.
We mentioned when we were sitting out on that veranda having lunch that that's one of the best hang spots we've ever been in.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, there's a few that rival it. Just as a note, the restaurant at the Ross course is called Hagen's Restaurant. As I said, yes. Walter Hagen won the PGA Championship. It's the original restaurant from the early French Lick Resort.
Oh.
That is literally the original restaurant from the early resort. So every place you turn at this place has, you know, dare I say it, history. Hashtag history nerd. Okay. Let's then move. Let's get back to the Jim Eng chocolate milk discussion. The Tom Bendelow nine-hole course called the Valley Links is... I'll start off by saying that it's the milk to the chocolate.
Yeah.
Although I don't want to make it sound like it's a pitch and putt course and just go, you know, sit back, because it's not. The greens have something to say about that at this course. But just before we get into the absolute magic of the afternoon the three of us had there, built in 1907, and the Taggart family, who I just mentioned, the mansion being the Dye Clubhouse was theirs. The Taggart family commissioned the course in 1907, and at the time, Tom Bendelow was a rising force in American golf. He had started this real massive push to build as many courses as he could. The course originally was 18 holes. And then the Cook family, who I've talked about before, they took over, they purchased the resort, and they had it redesigned into a nine-hole course in partnership, and this should tell you a lot, with U.S. Kids Golf. And I think we'll start off just by saying if there's a better nine-hole family, fun, enjoyable walk of a golf experience, well, there can't be too many of them that I can think about, because this place to me was really off the charts as far as a couple hours on a golf course.
Oh, so much fun. You go first, Chris. Give us your impression of the Bendelow, as we're calling it.
So it really kind of, I almost hesitate to talk about it because it felt like a little secret. You know what I mean? Like it felt like a, just a local kind of nine hole course where it doesn't have the glamour and glitz of the Dye or the Ross, right? It's got a very kind of subdued, clubhouse. And I think there was like a little tournament going on. They've got the scores handwritten on a poster board on the front. And, it just felt like home. Like this is a perfect way to end a golf trip. Like, let's go walk nine holes, you know, and it's quiet. And, you know, people were there. We ran into some people that let us play through them on one, and they're just happy to be outside, not at work.
Yeah.
You know, it was like that kind of vibe. Right. And it was just great. And speaking of the kids, so after you guys left, I went and ran it back and played it again. And I was thinking about going one more time, and like, I don't know, 30 kids just descended on the golf course because they were having some kind of middle school kind of tournament or something. And they all went to different holes. It was like a shotgun start. And I was like, all right, it's yours now. You can play it. And like parents were riding along, just watching. It just felt like this, you know, just cool local, you know, golf course.
And I said at the time, all I said when we were out there, if you come stay at French Lick and you're a golfer and you don't go out there and play, as I guess probably, man, I don't know, I would guess 75% of the people, the golfers who come to French Lick probably don't even think about the Valley Links.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And that would be such a shame. It is, as Chris said, either a place to close with, or I think a place to start. You know, you get there because, you know, the golf course itself, the greens are great. And they stack up to the greens everywhere else. They're totally designed differently, obviously. This golf course is about as flat as you can get. The hardest part of the walk on the Valley Links is getting to the first tee from the clubhouse. Tee, right? You know, yeah. Chris was pulling a cart. I was lugging my bag. Mitch was in a cart. So, you know, we kind of got all the different ways to get to the first tee there. But once you're on the golf course, the walk is just, it's basically an out and back nine hole that is incredibly flat. You know, you have a couple of raised tee boxes here. There's a little bit of mounding, but it's just an entirely pleasant walk through this valley, which hence the name, you know, with the creek running through it in spots and it's tree lined. You when you get on the final few holes, you run along a road kind of, but that to me makes it feel even more like a links, you know, like the true definition of a links, that this thing, you know, connects to the town in a way where these people who live on the other side of the road get this view through the trees of this golf course and people playing golf all the time. So to me, it's just, if you're not playing it, had we played it at the beginning, I would have tried to play more holes on it throughout the course of this thing. I mean, Chris had the right idea of running back out there. You know, if I hadn't played 500 golf holes in the previous right. 3 weeks, you know, I would have gone out there with him for another, you know, another nine as well. But it's just, it's a mistake if you're not including this in your golf trip.
And I'll just throw in my two cents. Chris, you and I were at one point, fairly early on, we turned to each other and I said, I feel like I'm in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
It felt, totally. And you said to me, it feels like Oregon.
Yeah.
And it has that kind of vibe, the trees and the way it's kind of surrounded on the outside edges by, it's a whole different feeling than the Dye and the Ross course, just feeling wise, just vibe wise. And the greens, as Darren said, there to me, that's kind of what tied it to the history of the place, because they don't take, you know, they're not immaculate conditions like the other courses are, but they're funky and quirky and strange. And all three of us would get to different angles on these greens and look and go, look how cool this is.
Yep.
Look at the way the greens shaped, and look at that, you know, there was a lost bunker on one of the holes where there was no sand, but it was clearly at some point had been a bunker probably. And it was if you were in there to hit a shot close to where the hole, you know, the flag was, would take a great shot. So it had all the elements of that kind of stuff. And as Darren said, if you don't have the Valley Links, the Bendelow 9 on there, when you go to French Lick, shame on you, and you're going to be missing something.
The greens were subtle, but as the kids would say, they were sick. Like they, you know, there was enough movement in them to screw with your head all the time. I don't know. I don't think one of us made a long putt on them. No. And it's because we couldn't quite figure them out. It wasn't because they, you know,
you
they
mean
weren't
it's not
unfair.
Because we can't putt?
No, because we made some putts on this trip, but. Darren. Yeah, well, Darren, I'm not a very good putter anyway.
You're sensitive because you five putted. You're sensitive.
That's right. I did not five putt any of these greens.
No, not
but
those.
We did not roll in any big long ones either, because they were tough to figure out. They were really well designed for greens that if you looked at them, you didn't like, they don't have the wow factor, you know, and the golf course obviously doesn't have the wow factor. It's not big and expansive. It's contracted almost in, you know, this little tree surrounded experience, as opposed to the Dye and the Ross, which are big and bold and, you know, see for a long ways. You know, it's just, it's the exact opposite of those. And because of that, it's fantastic. So anyway.
And you walked over there from the resort, right, Darren? I mean, it's that close.
Exactly. I walked. Yeah. I just threw my bag over my shoulder and walked out the front doors of French Lick Springs Hotel, as we're about to talk about. And, you know, it took me maybe kind of was a 5 to 10 minute walk from the front door to the clubhouse, and then another 5 to 10 minute walk from the clubhouse to the first tee.
But it really, that walk to the first tee leads you to a different world.
Yeah.
I mean, you're literally leaving the world of the French Lick Resort and you're going back in time to me. That's what it felt like.
The clubhouse is in a strange place. It's on the, you know, parking lot, garage,
yeah, right?
Parking lot. And then you go up and you go up this road, and the clubhouse is just kind of on the edge of this little hill with trees behind it. There's almost no room to build the clubhouse they did. And then you just keep walking down that road, and eventually you emerge into the actual valley. And it's, you know, like you said, it's a whole different, it's a whole nother world, as you like me to say, Mitch.
That's totally right. Before we leave the Valley Links, I just wanted to give a shout out and a mention to a really good friend who I got to meet and play golf with, actually, at Tobacco Road, Darren and Chris. Nick Bradley, great teacher. Justin Rose's former coach and Leona McGuire's former coach, and worked with the European Ryder Cup team. Nick Bradley's a friend of mine, and his family is a fantastic family. And his he's from England, and Ian, Nick's brother, came over and brought his son Anthony with him. And we were at Tobacco Road, and Anthony can play. I mean, he can play. So I turned to him and I said, are you a pro? Do you play? What are you doing? And he said, well, I don't play on tour, but I am a professional. I'm the director of golf at French Lick. And I went, oh, okay. And obviously I hadn't been there yet. So we've been back and forthing for a couple of years now, and I keep going, someday I'm going to get there. And I finally got there. So Anthony is responsible for the clubhouse at the Valley Links and kind of the intimate nature of it. It's pretty new. And his teaching studio is at the back end of that little clubhouse. He has a hitting bay. He's a Callaway fitter. He took me back there. He has a bay, and you open the door to the bay, and it's a beautiful view of the driving range and the practice facility at the Valley Links, which is where they have everything. And he's an unbelievable guy, really talented. He's 29 years old, and he's the director of golf there. And not just at the Valley, but French Lick. And it was so great to be able to spend some time with him. I didn't have long enough, but we talked for a while, and they're in good hands with Anthony Bradley there. So it's part of the Valley Links. If you go, stop and say hi. I'm sure he'd be happy to see you. And just wanted to give him a shout out also. A magic, magic place is the Valley Links. It's the only way I can put it.
Mitch, one other tip for people when they play the Valley Links: do not hit it to the orange flags. Hit it to the red checkered
flags.
That's
a good point. Why is that, Darren?
It's a foot golf course as well. In keeping with their family theme, there's a foot golf flag on every hole, usually not right around the green, thankfully. Ironically, a couple of times, and Chris and I mentioned this while we were playing, the foot golf holes were in places where golf greens would have been super cool. Like, I remember one of the holes would have dog-legged left around these trees back into this little cove where they put the foot golf hole. And I was thinking to myself, boy, that'd be a good place for a golf green on this hole, too. Yeah. So, but no, that's part of it as well. So, there's a part of me one of these days that wants to go out at a place like that and go play foot golf one time and see if it's any fun. Because I see people playing it and I hear people swear by it.
Well, here's how popular it is there. I was talking to Anthony about it. And when you're walking up from the hotel, like you did, Darren, up to the clubhouse, on the right-hand side, there's 4 or 5 foot golf holes just off to the side of the road that go down in a little hill there. And when I got up there, I asked him about it. And he said, we had to build that because when we put the foot golf course on the regular course, we got inundated by people who were just out playing foot golf.
Wow.
That's how many kids and their families were out. He said, so we had to put that out in the front just to take a little of the burden off. He told me they had an event a couple of weeks before we got there, and they had 100 people at this. And it was a business event. It was a corporate event that wanted
that's
to come
awesome.
And play foot golf. So
wow.
That's the kind of, you know, that's the way they look at the whole deal. And it's fantastic. You could tell we love this place. All right. We're going to move on to the resort itself because it's obviously such a big part of the whole thing. The French Lick Springs Hotel where we stayed, there's two hotels that are associated, the West Baden Hotel, which we'll talk about, which is insane. But the French Lick Springs Hotel, beautiful, classic, huge, built in 1845, 443 rooms. And Chris, I'm going to let you start off because they added a spa wing to the hotel in 1901, which is awesome. But it has every amenity you can think of, literally. Think of one, they have it at this place. But the rooms are what I want to talk about. And I know, Chris, that you have a feeling about this because when I opened the door to my room, I went, wow, got to be.
Yeah, they're massive.
Yeah.
Massive bedrooms. It's shocking. I mean, you can tell, like, did you know, the newer, you're just not going to get that size room in newer hotels. That's kind of the advantage of these older joints, right? Like those, I mean, the thing was, it's just little me. Like, it's like, it was like an echo when I walked in there. It's like cute.
Little me.
But yeah, like hallways. Walk-in showers, like they're just, it was just enormous, man. They're just huge. Yeah.
The hallways are insane too. I mean, just the pure size of the hallways, the width of these hallways as you go into your rooms is just like you're walking through a convention venue or something, you know, just in the hallways. It's crazy.
And that is, Chris, you hit the nail on the head. That's the, you know, the advantage of a place like this and these great old hotels. Some of them you go to without mentioning names and they feel old. They feel musty and kind of like time has forgotten them. This place is anything but that. It may have been built in 1845, but it is immaculately clean. It's really clear that they care about the entire experience. It's not like, well, we have an old historic hotel. I mean, I felt that way the whole time I was there. I really did.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, just walking into the lobby, you know, it's like all the ornate decorations that are built into, you know, that you can see up into the second floor and that kind of thing. You know, it's just, it's just gorgeous, man. It's just gorgeous architecture.
Cool. So we'll talk about a little bit about the meals. The first night we were there, Ryan said, let's go to the steakhouse. It's called the 1875 Steakhouse. Why, guys? Because that was the first year they ran the Kentucky Derby. What that has to do with a steakhouse in French Lick, Indiana, you got me.
I can't believe you haven't done more research to figure that out.
That's the
man.
Truth. No, once I saw that was the reason, I stopped the research there. Because I said, that's too weird. I'm not going there. But anyway, the meal was great. It was a great steakhouse meal. We all had different, you know, you'd think just steak, but no. We had all different kinds of meals. That was a fabulous place to start off.
Some people ate salmon at the steakhouse.
My hands raised. Mostly because I love salmon and I like to try it at different places. And there you go. I knew the steak would be good, but the salmon was great. Chris, you liked it too, I assume.
Oh, yeah. I did have a steak.
Yeah.
It was delicious. I also had an old fashioned, which is equally delicious.
That's strange. You did? I did too.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the, we got a couple of really good sides too.
Oh, boy.
That we kind of passed around. There was a lobster mac and cheese.
Lobster mac and cheese was good.
That was really good. Yeah.
Brussels sprouts? No. I love Brussels sprouts, by the way.
What was the, what were the shrimps there? They're like,
oh, colossal shrimp.
That's right.
And what did we say? We said, you better deliver if you're calling them on the menu, colossal shrimp. And they were.
They delivered.
They were
absolutely
they were colossal. They were as big as my arm. Let's just leave it at that.
There was some kind of really good corn hash too in those sides. I can't remember what it was called. But
they were all great. There were a couple other places we didn't experience. At least I didn't. I don't know about you guys. The Power Plant Bar and Grill.
Chris and I ate at the Power Plant.
Was it good?
And had a very, very good meal in there. It's kind of an odd, you know, place in there just because they had it all spaced out, you know, for COVID. But the food was great. The gal we had, was our server was she was fun. She was a firecracker, they would, as they would say. The service was top notch through the whole thing. And I would definitely go back in there and eat it. We had a really good meal.
Yeah.
Cool. They have a poolside bar, which none of us, we were too busy playing golf. It's called Spring Number 8. They have a pizzeria called Pluto's Pizzeria and a spot called the French Lick Mercantile or Teal. I never know which how to pronounce it. But that's a great place. First thing in the morning, they open at 6. They have a Starbucks in there I frequented every day I was there. But Darren, they also have ice cream, as you know. What was it called?
Scoops. Appropriately.
Scoops.
Very creative name.
Yeah.
But a lot of selection. There's a breakfast area, and it's a really it's right off the lobby, and it's a perfect spot for early in the morning, late at night. So,
and it took me a couple of days to find it. Otherwise, I would have had a milkshake in there every day. I had two on one day, the day that you and I went in there, and then after Chris and I had dinner at the Power Plant, we stopped in for another Scoops milkshake. So, I double dipped on one day there.
Oh my God, you're sick. Okay, double dipped at Scoops. That's going to be on your graveyard. That's the gravestone for you. I got it. Double dipped. He double dipped at Scoops. With a picture, with a milkshake picture. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move over to the other hotel. And I don't know if you two dudes got to go over there. Did you?
Yes.
I have been there, yes.
Oh, okay. So you've been there. The West Baden Hotel. And again, I'm not going to go into a whole bunch of detail. You have to go to FrenchLick.com and just look at the history section of it because you really want to read about this place. But I got to go over with Brendan Sweeney, as I mentioned before. He's the head of media relations. He works for French Lick. He knows everything about the place. To go over with him was like literally getting your own guided tour. It was once called the Eighth Wonder of the World, and it absolutely is. It was built in 1902. It replaced an earlier hotel that was destroyed by a fire. It took 500 workers, and I can't remember the name of the architect, but they brought in this really famous architect who promised the owner at the time that he could do it in less than a year. It took 500 workers, 277 nonstop days to build it. I mean, just a joke to even think about. But the atrium of the place is 200 friggin' feet.
Incredible.
Up. That will literally make your jaw drop when you look up at it. There's no other way to put it. From 1902 to 1913, it was the largest freespan dome in the world. What's the largest now, boys?
Come on. The U.S. Capitol. Huh?
Wrong.
I don't know.
The Houston Astrodome.
Oh.
Come on, sports guys.
God, you guys. I wasn't even thinking sports. Okay. I was thinking.
I know, but hey, you know, you would have won a prize if you knew that. But anyway, it's on the National Historic Landmark. Brendan takes me into, when you walk in the lobby, which is gorgeous, by the way, you walk in the lobby and this atrium is spread out and the rooms are all throughout the whole atrium. That's where all the rooms are around the sides. So he takes me to the middle of the atrium. Directly in the middle, and you look up, and it's 200 feet straight up. And he says, "Okay, listen to this." And he clapped his hands one time, and it echoed all through the atrium.
Yep.
Not loud. He didn't go crazy. He just clapped his hands. And it's a perfect echo chamber. He said, "You can stand here right now and listen to me speaking." And it's true. The echo of him speaking was kind of flying all around this thing. It is a marvel. Did you not flip out when you walked in there, Chris?
I don't know how you can't.
Yeah.
It's just, it's incredible. And it's, I'm like you're saying, it's just, it's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. It's amazing.
There's no way. Again, this is one of those places, and we talk about this a lot. You can say you can't imagine the Pete Dye course until you've been there. This is another place you can't imagine until you've been there. And what's really nuts, and they have, like the French Lick Springs Hotel, they have pictures on all the walls of these places that literally tell the story of the history of it. This place, they built this place, and then the Depression killed the business. Totally. Mm-hmm. It became a monastery for years. It was a small college, and then it went into total disrepair. And when you see the pictures of the West Baden Hotel, you can't believe what parts of it collapsed entirely, the whole thing. It looked like they should just level this place and build something else. But instead, the Cook family, again, now these guys are a joke. The family had a bunch of hotels in Indianapolis. They were obviously wealthy. But for them to do what they did in French Lick, so they came in 1996, and I asked Brendan what this family had spent on the entire resort. That's the French Lick Springs, the West Baden Hotel, which by itself cost a couple hundred million dollars. This is fact to Brendan Sweeney, $585 million have been put into French Lick in terms of renovation and all that they did since they took it over.
So that's crazy.
Just a little history on the West Baden. Again, like the Bendelo course. I don't know if anybody's compared the West Baden Hotel to the Bendelo course, Valerie. But if you go to French Lick and you don't make a trip, it's a mile away from the French Lick Springs Hotel. If you don't go to West Baden, boy, don't talk to me.
There's a cool little train that runs. Uh-huh. Between the two as well, which is kind of fun. We didn't ride it on this trip, but I have in the past. It's very cool.
All right, let's wrap up. We want to talk about one thing. There's a couple of places in, and it's a little town, the town of French Lick, but incredibly charming. Really small town America. I really dug that place. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the casino. I personally am not a gambler, although I will go with friends to have some fun, a couple of drinks, but I didn't do it. I was a little tired and I'm old. Did you guys go to the casino? I know Ryan and the Rieske brothers. Oh my God.
They partook.
we had to dig them out following their escapade.
Did you go in there?
Well, I am a gambler, but I did not go to the casino just because we were so busy with everything else that we did. But as you mentioned, the other guys did and played a lot of blackjack and shot craps and I think one of them, you know, paid for part of his trip in there. So that's a good sign. Yeah. You know, it's a
Ryan
beautiful
hit
place.
It. The first night Ryan was there, he hit it big.
Yeah.
But Ryan's the luckiest guy with this stuff ever that I've ever met.
Yeah, ever. Exactly. So it's a beautiful casino, and it's, you know, if you are a person who wants to add the gambling aspect to this entire thing, it's just another fantastic aspect of French Lick Resort. And I would highly recommend that you plan your trip a little differently than we did. You know, so I like you, Mitch, I'm getting old and I can't do the 36 holes and then the big giant meal and then the milkshake and then the casino. And then
five scotches.
Know,
yeah.
Get back to the room at 3 a.m. and turn around and be ready to shoot photography in the freezing cold at 5 a.m. like Chris and I did. So that was the only thing. Only thing we didn't partake in was the casino, I guess.
That was a recap of your trip in a nutshell.
That
was brilliant.
Yeah.
I was going to say also that the casino, and I won't belabor it, but the casino is a major reason why the whole resort is there. Because between that and Prohibition early in the 19th century, that's the reason why it became really popular. Because there was a lot of bootlegging going on in the area and the casino was there. So anybody who wants to go and pay some homage to the history, go there. All right, let's talk just
quickly. By the way, another reason it powers all of this, especially during COVID. Chris, tell me if I'm remembering this right, but a woman told us that the resort can only be open when the casino is open.
That's right.
So when they had to close the casino because of COVID, then they had to shut down the entire resort. But then when they got the casino back open, then they were able to open up the resort again. So it was kind of an interesting thing of how the casino is the lead horse in all of this now. And I'm sure that has to do with what their gaming board license says and all that kind of thing. But it was just kind of an interesting side note that we heard from someone who worked there.
Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. All right. A couple of the spots we hit when we went into town, the Legends with a Z bar, Legends. And that's a very cool place. Everything, we talked about how French Lick is a very small town. And as anybody who follows sports knows, Larry Bird was from French Lick, and it is the hub of all these places. There is nothing there that doesn't have to, in terms of the town, the little village, that doesn't have to do with Larry Bird. So,
Legend who is this Bar- Larry Bird of which you speak?
Yeah, he's some guy that apparently was really good at what they call the basketball.
was Legends? Was Legends the one that had the giant chair out?
No, I was about to. Get the other one, which was 33 Brick. Uh-huh. And I stupidly, we went in, Brendan Sweeney, who I said, you know, he's Mr. French Lick. So we go from the Legends bar and we walk around the corner to 33 Brick, which is closed. It's probably 20 after nine.
Right.
And Brendan, who may have had a few with us at various places, not for sure, but I'm just saying, goes up to the big picture window at the front. Am I right, Chris?
Yes, the best.
And literally throws himself against the window, arms outstretched, and goes, "Let us in! Let us in! We need a drink!" And of course, he knows the woman who runs the bar. So she opens the door. We go in. There's nobody really in there. And we got to experience the fullness of Larry Bird's career because they have every trophy, literally, that Larry Bird won during his time in the NBA. Chris, there's pictures of me and Chris holding the MVP trophy. Chris and me, I know I put it on, but there's a great picture of Chris with Larry Bird's Olympic jacket, you know, warm-up jacket on. Yeah. We got to look at all of it and hold a few of them too. And I got to say, it's if you're a fan of basketball, this is a pretty cool spot.
That, again, another one of, you know, you guys have traveled a lot. I've traveled a lot. There's a joy in the randomness of travel for me. And that was kind of like that perfect thing where you just kind of, when I'm holding that trophy, like, How did I get here? Right. This is absurd that I'm even allowed to do this, you know? And it's just like, I love those kind of moments when I travel that you just, that was not on the agenda. I did not know that place existed until the second that we stepped in front of it.
Until Brendan it was incredible. Threw himself against the picture.
Right. And it was just one of those, I can't believe I'm doing this type of moments, you know, in travel that you just, it was so great.
That's a great, so great way to put it. And another, just a, end to this funny story. I'm sitting at the bar. This woman is across the bar getting us drinks. And I'm sitting there and I went, "Why is it called 33 Brick?" And she looked at me like I was from Mars, literally. And she went, "Larry was number 33. And this restaurant is on Brick Street." And she talked to me like I was in kindergarten. Because nobody who's anywhere near there asked that question. Nobody.
That's funny. And the people that go there from out of town go there because it's called 33 Brick.
Right. And I know Larry Bird was 33. I just never put the two together. I didn't know where the brick came from. That didn't make any sense. But anyway, an absolutely fabulous experience to hit. I think, guys, we've pretty much covered about all. Really, really fantastic few days. I couldn't have been happier to be there.
Agreed. Thanks again to Ryan and Brendan and you guys for including me.
Hey,
can't wait to do it again.
Come on, Darren.
We can't wait to have Chris.
Hello,
we
Darren.
We can't wait to have Chris again either.
Well, this as a first one, this wasn't a bad one. I have to say, as a first time for the three of us together, it's not a bad one. It was a joy. It was great to spend time with you guys. Great to spend time with Ryan and the other people who came on the trip, too many of them to mention, but we thank them as well. And I don't know what else to say. We're all lucky as hell. I think that's the way I look at it. I really do.
Yep.
Darren, the listeners, we're thankful for them.
We are. We have to thank the listeners. We couldn't do it without them. Keep listening. Rate us on iTunes. Follow us on the social media at Golf Trip Experts. Help us share the world of golf travel far and wide.
God, that's so beautiful, Darren. That is just so beautiful.
I need a milkshake.
Yeah, don't you do. All right. A reminder, you can find Chris's Golf Origin Stories podcast as soon as you're done listening to this one. Go do it.
And fantastic. And subscribe to That Range Life on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Actually,
there
you go. You can actually watch Chris. You can see right. him and Bill talk to each other, unlike this one where we do it all through the magic of audio.
Right. That's true. You can also watch Chris on Golf Origin Stories there.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes.
But, At least you can see it.
It's true. You can get a glimpse of the... What did you call my studio? Some kind of ginormous studio?
Megalopolis. No, I called it the Mega Studio.
Right. That's what
it is. It is a media empire.
Well, Chris's episode of That Range Life on about French Lick, he did it like, I don't know, were you sitting in the room?
Yeah.
But you don't get to see the giant room because he only had a little tiny small area that he could do it in to make it work.
No, but you did get to see an outlet on the wall, which was just, I thought, one of the great marketing things that I've ever seen. I don't know.
A very big outlet.
Call me crazy. Well, the outlet's been there since 1845.
Right. Good point.
All right. Thanks, guys. This has been a blast. Everything about French Lick Resort was built on dreams, from its earliest settling to the massive renovations, and now a dream of making it one of the truly great golf destinations in the world. We'll be going back for sure. Here's hoping you can run down your own dreams too. So long. Yeah, I'm running down dreams.